Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading from the ninth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is chapter 10, the pastimes of the Supreme Lord Ramachandra. And today's text is 55, which is the last verse of that chapter. Premna Navritya Shilena Prashraya Vanata Sati Bhiya Hriya Cha Bhava Kya Bhartahu Sitaharan Manaha Premna Navritya Shilena Prashraya Vanata Sati Piyahriya cha bhavagya Bartuk sita haran manaha Premna navritya shilena Prashraya vanata sati Piyahriya cha bhavagya Partuk sita haran manaha Premna navritya shilena Prashraya vanata sati Bhiya hriya cha bhavagya Partuk sita haran manaha. Please chant. I'm going to make it a little larger. I see people are straining to see it. I can make it a little larger. Let's go to 360 and see what that does. Okay, now we just have to scroll down. Is that a little better? Oop. Okay, go ahead. Premna navritya shilena Prashaya vanata sati Dhyariya cha bhavagya Partuksi taharan manaha. Vaishnavis Premna navritya shilena Prashaya vanata sati Bhiya hriya cha bhavagya Artuk sita haran manaha Premna navritya shilena Prashaya vanata sati Bhiya hriya cha bhavagya Partuk sita haran manaha. Okay, so word meanings. Premna anavritya. Because of service rendered to the husband with love and faith. Shilena. By such good character. Prashaya avanata. Always very submissive. And ready to satisfy the husband. Sati, chaste. Bhiya, by being afraid. Hriya, by shyness. Cha, also. Bhavagya, understanding the attitude of the husband. Bharatahu, of her husband, Lord Ramachandra. Sita, Mother Sita. Aharat, simply captivated. Manaha, the mind. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. Mother Sita was very submissive, faithful, shy, and chaste, always understanding the attitude of her husband. Thus, by her character and her love and service, she completely attracted the mind of the Lord. Please repeat. Mother Sita was very submissive, faithful, shy, and chaste, always understanding the attitude of her husband. Thus, by her character and her love and service, she completely attracted the mind of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada's purport. As Lord Ramachandra is the ideal husband, Ekapatni Bharata, Mother Sita is the ideal wife. Such a combination makes family life very happy. Yad yad acharati shreshtas tat tat evataro janaha. Whatever example a great man sets, common people follow. If the kings, the leaders, and the brahmanas, the teachers, would set forth the examples we receive from Vedic literature, the entire world would be heaven. Indeed, there would no longer be hellish conditions within this material world. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 9th canto, 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Pastimes of the Supreme Lord Ramachandra. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tanamani. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pascha Chadeshtarne. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobishtang Shtapitang Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sopanantakam. Vandehang Shri Guru Shri Tapadakalam Kamalam Shri Guru and Vaishavaksha. Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvatam Tang Sajivam. Sadvaitam Savadutam Purijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvatangsa. He Krishna Karana Sindo Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindabaneshri Vrishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pancha Kopaturubhyasya Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Dittananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gorbhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this morning when I handed the announcement paper to Naikatma Prabhu, he got a little confused because the first line I wrote was that today is Lalita Shasti. So he said, Lalita Shasti is giving class. So Lalita Shasti means the appearance of Lalita. And it's kind of interesting that this day falls when this verse comes, because it's just kind of the polar opposite. As we know, there... Yes, yeah, she appears before Radharani. So it's just the polar opposite. As we know, there are two types of conjugal dealings that the Lord engages in when he, eternally, but when he comes into this material world, he displays both types. One is called Parakya, and the other one is Swakya. So which is which? Sita would represent which one? Swakya, yes. This is the married conjugal rasa. When Krishna comes, or in any most of his other expansions, he displays this Swakya rasa of being a married husband and having a wife. Characteristics are generally, as you see here, shy, chaste, submissive. And who wouldn't be? We're all supposed to be shy, chaste, and submissive to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's not that Sita Devi is asked to do something that is out of the ordinary. Every one of us are, in a sense, patni to the Lord. We're the Lord's energy, and the energy is meant to serve the energetic source. Whereas Lalita, Radharani, and the other, who can say the names of the Ashtashaki? It is easy. We start out with the top. Lalita, Vishaka. That's why whenever we have just two of the Sakis, we always have Lalita Vishaka. So Lalita Vishaka first. Then the easy way to remember them is there are two Devis. What are the two Devis? Sudevi, Rangadevi. Then there's Champakalata, Tungavidya, Chitra, and Induleka. Those are the eight Sakis. Easy way to remember. So they represent the other side, the Parakiya Ras, the girlfriend Rasa, as we would say in this material world. Not married, they're not formally married to Krishna. Radharani has a husband. Every one of these Sakis, they have their husbands. But Krishna is the real Lord of their heart. So externally, this seems like cheating. Seems like something immoral. And some foolish people even say like that. Prabhupada mentioned that. He said there are some foolish people in India. They say they like Bal Krishna, baby Krishna, you know, Makanchur Krishna. But they don't like Gopi Krishna because he's immoral. So this is nonsense. This is total nonsense. This is speculation. That means they've not been properly trained they've not been properly trained in understanding Krishna and Krishna's pastimes. There is no difference, Prabhupada said, between Bal Krishna and Gopi Krishna. Similarly, some say they don't like Arjun Krishna because this is ghastly. That's warfare, battle of Kurukshetra. But same thing, Prabhupada said, there's no difference between Arjun Krishna, Gopi Krishna, Bal Krishna, they're all the same Krishna. So this foolishness of trying to distinguish, I like this Krishna, but I don't like that Krishna. This is just nonsense. Total nonsense. So as Vaishnavas coming in this Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya line, we should understand totally, completely, all the different nuances of Krishna's pastimes. That's why Krishna says, Janma, Karma, Chame, Divyam. You should understand that all of Krishna's activities are divya. They're divine. They're not ordinary. So whether he's on the battlefield of Kurukshetra telling Arjuna to kill Karna while he's off his chariot, which seems, again, that seems immoral. But it's Krishna, he's the Supreme Personality of God, and everything he says is the topmost degree of morality. Everything he says, everything he does, whether it's dancing with supposedly other men's wife, this is total nonsense. Everything belongs to Krishna. Everyone belongs to Krishna. So there's no question of immorality on his part. Every one of us belongs to him. So Sita Devi is being presented here as representing these very desirable qualities. And as disciples, we are meant to also exhibit these qualities towards the spiritual master. So here it's mentioned that she's chaste. Chastity is required in the relationship between the guru and the disciple. To be quite frank, and not just in Prabhupada's case, it happens in the case of just about any spiritual master and who has made more than one disciple. Sometimes the disciples become unchaste. Mukunda Maharaj tells the story, he told me personally, that when Prabhupada was not well, in the early days in San Francisco area, they had got a house for him in Stinson Beach, hoping for him to recover his health. But it wasn't going well, so Prabhupada decided that he would go to India, because in that climate he would have a better chance of regaining his health. So when Prabhupada was about to leave, some of the not yet quite chaste disciples had come together and decided that who's going to lead us, who's going to, you know, tell us what to do and how to do. So maybe we should go to Swamiji, they were still calling him Swamiji at that point, and ask him if it's alright for us to have another leader guru while he's gone to India. So Mukunda Maharaj was deputed to go and ask that question. Whoa. So he went into Prabhupada's room, paid his obeisances, and then Prabhupada wanted to know what he wanted, and he told him. He said that, you know, there's been some discussion about what was going to happen when you go to India. Do you think it would be okay if we got another guru to lead us? And Prabhupada started to cry. Prabhupada said he don't understand. Prabhupada said he don't understand the relationship between guru and disciple. You don't understand. My guru saved me. In other words, I'm saving you, and there's no question of somebody else intervening or being interjected in that relationship if you understand what's going on. So it's the same thing for all of us, not just those early disciples who were, obviously they're not very advanced at that point and they were being trained. But now we have no excuse. This business of, yes, you know, I like Prabhupada and I've even been initiated by Prabhupada, but now I want to go and hear from this per Swami or that Swami. That is being unchaste. That is being unchaste. Prabhupada made it quite clear. He gave us everything we needed for success in spiritual life. We don't need to go anywhere else. We don't need to go anywhere else. Some, again, when Prabhupada left the planet, some of his disciples, again, not being so advanced, they got this idea that only an elderly Indian gentleman can be a pure devotee, and therefore Prabhupada is gone. We have to find another elderly Indian gentleman to follow. Somebody in the Gaudiya Math or, you know, some... You know, this is, again, it's just, it's neophyte mentality, and it's being unchaste. Once you've accepted the Guru, your spiritual leader, eternally, it's not just for this lifetime or that maybe he has to come back and get me in the next lifetime. This is an eternal relationship. And Prabhupada pointed that out also. He said, at the end of the Mr. Nair pastime, he said, there's an ISKCON in the spiritual world, and all every one of us will be there, except for Mr. Nair. So, we're all related to Prabhupada eternally, and through Prabhupada we're related to each other eternally. This is not something to be taken lightly. You know, once you've accepted Guru, there's no question of injecting somebody else in there, in that relationship. So now, one may say, well, what about the disciples of Srila Prabhupada who became Guru, and then they fell? Yes, I mean, that is also discussed in the Shastra, that possibility is there. But we're talking about the normal case here. The normal case is you accept a spiritual master who remains a spiritual master in good standing, and your relationship with that spiritual master is eternal. It's eternal. There's no question of substituting. Oh, you know, I liked him up to this point, but now I don't like him so much, so I'm going to find somebody else. And that means one did not understand the spiritual contract that one was entering into. So, to be chaste, to be shy also. The disciple should retain this shyness. Shyness means, in this context, not being so bold as to promote oneself. One should always be in the mood of promoting one's spiritual master. I've told that story many times. Prabhupada said, when one disciple said to him, you know, Srila Prabhupada, when I'm preaching, and immediately Prabhupada cut him off. What do you mean when you're preaching? I'm preaching and you're assisting me. So that's always the mood of the disciple. Then the mood of the disciple is that I'm an assistant to my spiritual master. My spiritual master has a mission, which Prabhupada made quite clear what his mission is. Not was, is. International Society for Krishna Consciousness is Srila Prabhupada's mission for saving the fallen conditioned souls. And we're all meant to assist him in that mission. We're meant to assist them. We're not to promote ourselves as big, big preachers and, you know, I have this idea of how to do things differently. What differently? Prabhupada gave exactly what he wanted. Book distribution, prasadam distribution, harinam, deity worship. It's all outlined. And if you're a sincere follower of Srila Prabhupada, there's no end of opportunity for service in just those four activities. Book distribution, prasadam distribution, harinam, deity worship. You could have lifetimes of activities doing those things. There's no question of looking for other things to do. So, again, this is... So shyness in this context between the guru and the disciple means don't promote yourself. Promote the guru. Promote the guru's mission. That's shyness. One time in India, I think it was in Allahabad, maybe. Anyway, I can't forget which city, but disciples were walking with Srila Prabhupada, and one disciple was saying how he always felt so a little bit uncomfortable around Srila Prabhupada. He never could get to the point of being as comfortable as he saw some of the other disciples. They were very friendly with Prabhupada and very comfortable in his association. And Prabhupada actually approved. He said, yes, one has to be very careful in the relationship between guru and disciple, because if you make one mistake, it's an aparad. It's an offense, and that offense can ruin your spiritual progress. So one should always be a little bit leery and a little bit... Don't be so eager to be comfortable and buddy-buddy. The spiritual master should set the tone. Yes, after some time, when the disciple is sufficiently advanced, the spiritual master may turn it into more of a friendly relationship. But you wait for that. Don't push it. Don't push it. Not that, hey, I've been a disciple for 20 years, 30 years, you know, I have a right to go slap my guru on the back and, you know. No. No. This is playing with fire. This is playing with fire. One should always take one's cue from the spiritual master, not that you're eager to set the tone of how the relationship should go. And if you can't do that, then it's better, like I've told the story several times, I was in New York, and I think it was like 88, 89. So one young brahmachari that I knew there, I saw him packing to go. I said, where are you going? He said, I'm going to LA. So I said, why? What's going on? He said, well, my guru's coming to New York, and I know if he comes here, he's going to tell me to do things that I may not want to do, so I'm leaving. That's actually better. That's a better attitude. Better to go away than to get an order that you don't fulfill. Because when the guru gives an order, one should fulfill it. Same thing again, and I think it was in New Zealand. Prabhupada was there, and he wanted the temple president at the time to leave there and go somewhere else to do something. But the disciples noticed that he didn't give the temple president an order. He kept suggesting that I think it would be nice that if you went to, I think it was Australia or wherever, and the disciple was resisting. So then the other disciples asked Prabhupada, why didn't you order him? And Prabhupada said, if I ordered him and he didn't do it, it would be a great offense. So he was suggesting, maybe it would be nice if you did such and such. So this is how one should take it seriously. If the spiritual master gives an order, one has to fulfill that order. Very, very serious relationship. So to be shy, to be chaste, these are qualities that the disciples have to have towards the spiritual master. And not to be taken lightly. The guru-disciple relationship is an extremely serious one. The guru has come on Krishna's order, on Krishna's desire to save us from rotting in this material world. And it's a debt that we cannot repay, ever. And so that connection is there eternally. Part of being a conditioned soul is that we don't like to be ordered. Prabhupada said, this is why Krishna comes back as Lord Chaitanya. When he comes as Krishna, he's displaying his opulence as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. So he orders, Sarva Dharma Parityaj, Mamekam Sharanam Prajam. Surrender to me, become my devotee, think of me, do what I tell you to do. This is God, he's ordering. But Prabhupada said, as conditioned souls, we wonder, that's too much. Why is he telling me what to do? And Krishna knows that. So he comes back again as Lord Chaitanya, and he shows the example of how to surrender to Krishna. And he induces us and enthuses us to do simple things, chant, dance, take prasadam. And in this way, we gradually become purified enough to follow Krishna's order. Otherwise, if we're not purified, we don't want anybody to order us to do anything. We always want to be the one to give the orders, or at least figure it out myself and do what I want to do. But lifetime after lifetime, Maya seduces us like that. You're intelligent. You're smart. Why should anybody tell you what to do? You know the philosophy. Do what you want. And inevitably, we don't get out of the material world with that mentality, so we have to come back. So if we're really serious about getting out of here, we have to come to the point of accepting the order of Krishna or Krishna's representative. That is what is going to save us, not our own way of doing things. We bring that mentality even when we come into the spiritual association, that just teach me the basics and then I will figure it out and do it myself. That's materially contaminated consciousness, because people want name and fame. That's how they approach life. Just teach me the basics of computer science or whatever, and then I'll figure it out so I can come up with some new way of doing things, and I'll get the glory for doing that. But spiritual life is not like that. One of the qualities, the 26 qualities of a devotee, is that the devotee is silent. So Prabhupada explained, right here in New York, I think it was, I heard him say that, or New York, I think it was right here in New York, he explained. Silent means silent worker. Whatever the guru asks you to do, you do it silently, not looking for name and fame and eager to tell everybody how you did this and that. That's neophyte mentality. The advanced mentality is the devotee is not looking for glorification. Whatever the guru is asked to be done, or what one knows the guru wants to be done before he even orders you, this is first class servant. First class servant is understanding the guru's heart and soul desire and doing it without being asked. Second class servant is being ordered to do it and doing it. And the third class is even after being ordered, not wanting to do it. That's third class servant. So we all should strive to become first class servants, where we understand the mission, mentality, the mood of the guru, and we execute the mission without having to be ordered every little thing, do this, don't do that. This is first class servant. Second class, at least, we need to come to that platform where the order is there, do this, chant your 16 rounds, go out on preaching activities like that. And we do it, hopefully with some enthusiasm. And then again, like I said, the third class is even after that order has been explicitly given, we find reasons why we don't want to do it, why we want to do something else or nothing at all. So I'm going to stop here. Normally, I'm always trying to induce the traveling preachers to put on some presentation when they come back home. I didn't feel like we really needed to do it because I have so many hundreds of pictures posted on my Facebook page. But Vaninath wouldn't let me off the hook. He said, no. You're always pushing devotees, preachers, to make a presentation. So I'm going to make a little bit of a presentation, just a few slides. Because like I said, I have hundreds, literally hundreds of slides on my Facebook page if you really want to know what I was up to for the 3 weeks of travel, you could just go there and see. But so let me just put a few slides on the screen and say a few words. All right, who recognizes those deities? Radha Govinda, New York. My first deities, when I joined in 73, these were the deities. So you may wonder, why Radha Govinda? I thought you went to Europe. Well, to make a long story short, by the mercy of Nagapattini Mataji, I had a reduced price ticket known as a buddy pass, but it means you have to fly standby. So the first leg of the trip was LA, New York, and it was supposed to be New York to Brussels and then Brussels on to Ukraine. So I barely made it on that first flight. I was the last person they allowed on the plane. There was only one seat left. Whew. Okay. Made it to New York, and then waiting to get on a flight to Brussels. Couldn't get on. So had to spend a night in the New York Temple. I had not been there since 1995. So that next morning I went down from Mangalarti, and I bowed down and stood up, and then I realized this was the arrangement of Radha Govinda. They were telling me, "You rascal, we are your first deities, and after so many years, you haven't come to see us." So there they are, Radha Govinda Ji Ki Jai. So I immediately was thinking, is it possible to give your heart to more than one set of deities? What do you think, Omkar? That was my conclusion also, that Krishna manifests in so many wonderful forms all over the world, all over the universe. So one can be attracted to all of them. Now, generally speaking, there's going to be one that's going to be most prominent in your consciousness. But it certainly is possible to be attracted to more than one form of the Lord. So finally got on a flight to Brussels, a day late, and stopped in Brussels. There's a preaching center there, and these are the presiding deities, Shri Gauranitai. Just to give you scale, because you can't tell looking at this picture, this is the temple room. That's how small they are. Very tiny deities, but very potent, very powerful. So this room is a temple room and also becomes a yoga studio during the daytime. And very, very wonderful devotee there, Janmastavi Das and his wife, they run the center. Wonderful, wonderful devotees. And they're having some success. They have, you know, like a Sunday Peace program and other programs that they do. He also makes prasadam every day, and he's started a delivery service where he delivers to nearby offices and stuff like that, so doing quite well. This is the outside from the sidewalk looking in. You can see they have their yoga sign there. And this is the front door entrance. Then after that, finally got on the flight to Lviv in Ukraine. And this is the official poster calendar for the Bhakti Sangam 2015. It was held on a lake, and there's an area of Ukraine called the Transcarpathia region. Transcarpathia because it overlaps about 4 or 5 different countries, including Ukraine. And in that area, there are a bunch of lakes. So this lake is called Lake Suyats. This is where the festival was held this year. And sterile lineup of ISKCON leading kirtaniyas were there. Everybody recognizes. Who is this? Avi Prabhu. And next to him, that's his son, Omkar. And thousands of devotees. There are approximately almost 3,000 devotees this year, which is about half of what they normally get. And the reason why they didn't get their normal 5,000-6,000 attendees is because of the tension between Russia and Ukraine. So a lot of Russian devotees, thousands of them who would normally come, they didn't come across the border this year because it was hard for them. You could, but it was very, very, they make it very, very difficult. For instance, some devotees who are in the Crimea, which has been annexed by Russia, they went to Moscow and then they came. But it was very, very difficult to get papers to cross the border, so thousands of them didn't come. Now, I noticed, and many of it was obvious, that there were probably twice as many Matajis there as men. And so I was inquiring, why? Why do people think this is so? And they say, in general, In the Ukraine, this is approximately the ratio, about 2-to-1 women join to men. And because of that, I mean, it's a known fact, it's an open secret. Many, many devotee men from around the world, they go to the Ukraine festival for, I mean, sometimes devotees say crassly wife shopping, but it's not wife shopping. They're trying to find, a wife, which is okay. Most of us want to move on from the Brahmachari ashram to the Grihastha ashram. And there's no guarantee that you're going to find a wife or a husband where you live. It's not that because I live in New Dorka that I'm going to find a wife or a husband in New Dorka. It's not necessarily the case. So, you know, many devotees travel looking for a wife or a husband. But it's not without its dangers. Not just the usual danger of, you know, later incompatibility. But while I was there, Niranjan Maharaj, who is the main organizer of this festival, he told me that unfortunately there was one devotee who came before the festival, actually went to Ukraine. And for some reason, he felt inspired to go to the hot spot, the area where there's still a lot of tension going on. He wanted to go there to try to find a wife there. But unfortunately, he never came back. He was looking for a wife. He was trying to find a wife in Ukraine. But he went to the hot area, you know, where there's still a lot of tension, and he disappeared, completely disappeared. So through their connections, Niranjan Swami and, you know, some of his leading devotees there, they have some connections that are not to be made public, but through their connections they found out that he was actually tortured and murdered. Because the rebels there, they saw him as being a spy for the Ukraine. So this is a danger. One should, you know, because the devotees warned him, the Ukrainian devotees warned him, don't go to that area. It's not safe. Don't go there. But he didn't listen. So anyway, again, so a stellar lineup of kirtan leaders. Who is this? Madhav. And not only kirtaniyas, but a lot of senior devotees were in attendance to give their association and take association, because these young devotees are such wonderful service attitude, not just towards senior devotees, but in general. They just have a very wonderful service mood. So it's not that the senior devotees go there to preach and, you know, give their association. See, they also learn a lot by associating with these wonderful young devotees. So here's Niranjan Maharaj. He's the, again, chief organizer. And the kirtans were just exquisite, ecstatic, just went on for hours and hours and hours. And so I don't associate with Niranjan Maharaj too often. We don't cross paths too often. But so I took advantage, and we had some private discussions. And one of the things I commended him for was setting the example of cooperating with his God brothers. Because, you know, there's so many powerful leaders there, Shivaram Maharaj, Govinda Maharaj, and on and on and on, Dev Ramacha Swami. So, and he just sets such a wonderful mood of cooperating with these other powerful preachers. Sometimes, you know, when devotees become a little bit advanced in preaching, they want to do their own thing. They don't want to get along with their God brothers. And, you know, this is just, again, not nice. Prabhupada specifically said that your love for me will be shown by how well you cooperate in pushing on this movement. So Niranjan Maharaj, he definitely sets that mood of cooperating nicely with his God brothers and inviting them to all these big festivals and, you know, just taking care of them very nicely. Wonderful mood. So I said to him, not only do you work in harmony with your God brothers, but you also harmonize with them. Because on one night, when Shivaram Maharaj was leading, Niranjan Swami and Govinda Maharaj, they were chanting harmony behind him, and it was just so wonderful. And for all of the kirtans, practically, they had these young, there were two specialists, this young lady, and another one that they were always playing violin very vigorously for hours on end. Beautiful. Here is just a segment of the tent. You can see the devotees were ecstatically chanting and dancing. And so then after that, went to Radhadesh. This is they have three altars there. Radha Gopinath, Lalita Vishaka in the middle, Jagannath Baldev Subhadra and Gaur Nitai, and stayed there for Janmasthami. This is what the Radhadesh castle looks like for those who have never been there. And they're here, they were preparing for Janmasthami, that's why they have so many tents in front of the temple. And this is Janmashtami night. I was, that morning after Mangalartika, I was thinking very, very deeply that, you know, this is the first time in almost 20 years that I will not be doing the midnight artika. I've always been fortunate here in New Dorka for the last 17 years that almost every year, I can't remember missing one, I get to do the midnight artika. So I was thinking that morning in Radhadesh, you know, it would be so nice. I'm going to miss that feature of Janmashtami. So lo and behold, in the afternoon, the temple president came to me and said, you know, Prahladananda Maharaj had been scheduled to do the midnight artika, but he has to leave. He's going to Spain. Can you do it? So these are some of the preps that they offered. I had an opportunity to take some pictures before the curtain is open and how the deities were dressed for that midnight arti. And there it is. I got to blow the conch. And then moved on to France. This is ISKCON Paris, which is not exactly in the center of Paris. It's about half an hour outside of the center, in an area known as Sarcelles. And here is the other deity that's really attracted my mind. I hadn't seen him since 1976, Radha Parasishwar. And at that time in 96, when I had seen him, they were in a rented house in Noisy-le-Grand, and it was very, very tight, extremely tight. Now they own this building, and it's a little bigger. Not exactly as big as they would like. You can see they don't have the three deities, you know, in lined up in a row. They have to have Gaudentai and Jagannath in front of Parasishwar. But beautiful anyway. Beautiful, beautiful deities, beautiful worship that they do there. Considering they have a very, very small crew of devotees. Very, very small. But Parasishwar is just, in my mind, one of the most beautiful deities in ISKCON. Yeah. No, this is not the original temple. The original deities. I actually have pictures of the original temple. I didn't throw them in the slideshow, but I'll have them online on my Facebook page. Yeah, I went to the original temple, which is about, it's a short walk. If you know L'Arc de Triomphe, that famous arc in the middle of Paris. So there are a bunch of avenues that radiate from that center. You know, they go out radially. So there's an Avenue Folk. You go about one block down and then you turn, and then the original temple is there, walking distance from L'Arc de Triomphe. So I actually went there and took some pictures. But yeah, it's now an embassy. I think it's the Argentinian embassy is what that building is. And this is what the new place looks like, the house that they bought. Interesting history. They actually have a guest house a little bit down the block from the temple. And that guest house was supposed to be the temple, but it was very small, tight, and so they were always looking for another building. And they became friends with this. There's a Chaldean community on that block, so one of the members of that community, they own this house. And gradually, over a number of years of becoming friends with him, they convinced him to sell him the house. So the guest house, he said, the temple president was saying, they bought for 550 euros, which is more than $500,000. And this building, this house, when the property that goes with it, they bought for 850 euros, which is $1 million plus. So I was always under the impression that they were struggling there, but obviously they're doing pretty well in terms of collecting money. But no, he told me that there was one main donor that gave a big chunk of that. So, and it's a little bit cold, even at this time of year in Paris, so they light a fire in the temple room and you sit down and chant japa in front of the fireplace. And then back to home, back to New Dorka. So, as Omkar Mataji confirmed, one can give one's heart to more than one forms of Krishna. But I'm glad to be home. So, Rukmini Dorka Dish Ki Jai. Gaur Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai. Hari Bol.
Paramatma is the Lord in the heart.
I mean to say, listen.